What can your home address tell you about your child's risk of hospitalization? Researchers at Cincinnati Children's say it can tell you a whole lot. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss a tool Cincinnati Children's has developed and its implications are Cincinnati Children's MD PhD candidate in the Division of Biomedical Informatics, Carson Hartlich. Thanks for being here, Carson.
Thanks for inviting me.
And Legal Aid Society of Southwest Ohio team lead attorney, Rachel Barr. Thank you for being here, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both here. Carson, you created this tool, or you were part of a team, led the team to create this tool designed to predict possible hospitalizations. How does it work?
Yeah, great question.
That's an easy question, but it's a complicated answer.
So we used data from the Cincinnati Children's medical record and open data from various public sources, including the city, Hamilton County, and the U.S. Census Bureau. And we used a machine learning model, which is kind of just like a fancy statistical model, put all that data in, and it fit and gives us these predictions that we're able to use to kind of rank addresses by risk of hospitalization.
Yeah. So what kind of data, like what are specific types of data you put in there?
Yeah. So we used no clinical or demographic data. We used only social and environmental characteristics. So for example, from the county auditor, we used the value of homes, the year they were built, and the type. So like a single family home versus an apartment building, as well as crime and housing code violations data from the city of Cincinnati.
And Carson, what did you find in terms of the key factors that really affected hospitalizations?
Yeah, so some of the most important variables or the pieces of data that helped the model predict the most out of all of the different data we put in were market value of the house, crime within 200 meters of the address, and housing code violations.
Mm. Well, I know for years there have been a lot of studies that have found a person's zip code can really be predictive of health. How is this different, Carson?
Yeah, so like you said, lots of work has been done at the zip code or the neighborhood level. We are kind of moving to a different level of precision at the address level. So for example, there's 71 zip codes in the city of Cincinnati, but there's 77,000 residential addresses.
Wow.
So this is kind of like a microscope to zoom in within neighborhoods and see what kind of differences there are among addresses in a specific area.
Yeah. Rachel, I know Legal Aid has partnered with Cincinnati Children's for years to provide legal advocacy for families that Children's serves. Have you seen connections between where kids live and the health problems they have?
Yes. There are so many non-medical factors that go into kids' ultimate health outcomes. Those are called social determinants of health. And those include things like where you live, the crime rate of your neighborhood, your ability to access healthy food, your ability to go to school and have a good education, your parents' ability to work and have a stable income. We know from the data, and we also know from our own advocates' experiences, we see every day that there are lots of things outside of the doctor's office that are impacting kids' health outcomes.
Mm. We are talking about a tool developed at Cincinnati Children's that can predict a child's chance of hospitalization based on their address. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Rachel, can you talk a little bit more about what you and the team at Legal Aid have observed over the years in terms of trends? I guess I'm wondering, are there particular properties that come up repeatedly, just the patterns that you all have seen?
Sure. We often see that the older housing stock, particular landlords, there we do see more housing conditions issues. And by that, I mean poor housing conditions, mold, pests, roaches, things like that, that are impacting kids' health. So we do see a trend often by neighborhood, which there's a lot of research, as you mentioned, showing that neighborhood impacts kids' hospitalization rates. We do see that through our work and with specific landlords as well.
Yeah. And what kind of legal action have you been able to take in these cases, and what kind of impact has that had on children's health?
So we do a lot of different types of housing work. We do a lot of eviction defense. We know that eviction and forcing a child or a family to move from their home is statistically related to negative health outcomes. We also help with housing conditions issues. So if there are health code violations, building code violations that have not been acted upon by the landlord, we can help folks escrow their rent. And there are other legal options that we can take to help make sure that kids have safe and healthy housing.
Yeah. Some of those health code violations can be really difficult to get at. I mean, especially in terms of mold, just like the testing that goes into that. Can that be a struggle for clients?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of our clients have so many things going on. Living in poverty is a challenge, and every day there are different priorities for our clients. And so in order for legal aid to often be able to help with some type of health code violation, we need folks to report in writing to their landlord that there is an issue with their housing. Then they need to report to the health department or the building department and ask for an inspection. And then they have to give a reasonable amount of time before legal action can be taken. And when folks are dealing with so many other issues, it can be hard for them to take those steps. Yeah. So it's definitely a challenge.
Carson, Rachel was talking about things like black mold and roaches. Can you talk a little bit about the links between those things and health? Isn't there a connection between like rates of asthma and severity of asthma when you have conditions like that?
Yeah, so mold and pests are great examples of housing-based environmental factors that can influence, like you said, asthma is probably the widest spread housing-sensitive health condition. As well as other respiratory diseases, mental health even can have connections, injuries, infection. So lots of different health conditions are influenced by factors outside of someone's clinical characteristics or something that you could measure in the doctor's office. And that was what we were trying to capture.
Yeah. So Carson, in this research, what percentage of residential addresses in Cincinnati did you find to be high risk? You mentioned there are like 77,000 addresses that you were looking at. What percentage of those are really high risk?
Yeah, so there's lots of ways you can define high risk. We found around 7% of addresses had any hospitalization in the time period we were looking at, which is 6 years long. So you could define high risk by what type of intervention you want to do. You can only do it at X many addresses. And it's really just kind of a ranking where you can move up and down what you want to define as high risk based on how you want to use the model.
Hmm. Okay. Rachel, Carson mentioned earlier that this research found housing conditions and nearby violent crime are predictive of hospitalizations or can be predictive of hospitalizations. How do those findings align with what you and your team have observed? Like we've talked about housing conditions and how tough that can be, but what about the violent crime aspect of it?
So we know that violent crime in a neighborhood, it can contribute to something called adverse childhood experiences, which can long-term impact kids' mental health. And so we know, like just like Carson said, that there not only are there physical health impacts of some of these non-medical factors, but there are also mental health impacts. And we see that impacting kids who are living in neighborhoods with higher rates of violence.
Yeah. And that mental health, I mean, that can affect brain development and all kinds of things, can't it, Carson? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely just any sort of exposure to adverse conditions at a young age can impact you throughout your life.
Yeah. Well, again, we're talking about this tool that Cincinnati Children's has developed that can predict a child's chance of hospitalization based on their address. If you've got questions, you can call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Carson, as I understand it, this isn't a tool the public can use to just like type in an address and search to figure out if that address could be like bad news for their children's health. So how can this information be used?
Yeah, I think at this point in the research, the model is mostly aimed at people who can work on a population level. So whether that's care management professionals at Cincinnati Children's, policymakers at the city or county level, or community organizations like Legal Aid, who want to try to target limited resources to areas or people who could use the interventions most.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you, I guess I'll start with you, Carson, and then go to you, Rachel, so you get to hear the question and get to think about it a little more. But do either of you have any concerns about the question of fairness? I'm wondering, like, some of these things, like housing code complaints, for example, maybe could they be overreported in lower income neighborhoods and underreported in neighborhoods with more resources? How do you deal with that question of fairness in all this?
Yeah, it's definitely a concern because we don't want this to be used to further disadvantage already disadvantaged families or communities. And I think Rachel can probably comment more on the specifics around housing code violations, which are actually tend to be underreported in poor neighborhoods due to fear of landlord retaliation or things like that. But I think my main message I want to say is that we want to avoid labeling families as bad or saying, because you live here, your kid is going to get sick. We want this to be used at a broader level to try to prevent sickness and improve conditions for people who need it most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And Rachel, I'm sure you must see that concern about retaliation from landlords. Some low-income people own their homes and get housing code violations and have those stack up. What do you see in that regard? Or do you have any concerns about fairness in that regard from legal aid's perspective?
So legal aid only helps folks who are low income. So I don't have a good sense of if there's a disparity in reported health code violations or building code violations. But I would surmise, as Carson mentioned, that building code violations and health code violations in those neighborhoods where most of our clients live are likely underreported, just from the experiences I've seen with the clients who are referred to us through our medical legal partnership with Cincinnati Children's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you all at Legal Aid, do you end up representing lower income people who own their homes and are dealing with some of these problems as homeowners?
So we do represent homeowners in some situations. I'm not aware of representing homeowners to help with code violations like this. Typically, when we're dealing with code violations, it's in the landlord-tenant context.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Carson, you have talked about, you've said this tool could lead to health interventions, kind of population-wide health interventions. How would that work?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the next step we want to take, is to figure out what interventions might be best or optimize the model in ways that can target addresses that most need a specific type of intervention, like legal aid. So I think partnerships with community organizations, government entities, or within the healthcare system are all ways we could use this to target high-risk addresses.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, do you have thoughts about how this information could help legal aid with what you do or, the work that you're doing with families?
Sure. So we have a long history at Legal Aid of doing place-based work, neighborhood-based work based on this type of data. We're actually in the process of doing strategic planning, and we are looking at lots of mapping data. We're looking at things like eviction records, consumer debt cases, and where the people live who are the defendants in those types of cases, foreclosure cases, so that we can make sure that we are putting our limited resources into the neighborhoods and getting them to the families who are most in need.
Yeah. Carson, do you foresee other potential partnerships with this information between, what you all are doing at Cincinnati Children's and other groups? Obviously, there's this longstanding partnership between Children's and Legal Aid, but do you think there could be other partnerships with other agencies or organizations?
Yeah, I think Cincinnati Children's has tons of relationships in the community, more than I could probably cover or know about right now. But I think there is a lot of potential to partner outside of the healthcare system and form kind of an ecosystem of just promoting better health for kids in our community.
What about citywide policy interventions to improve health? What do you think the potential is there, Carson?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've shown is that like crime and housing code violations are things that are affected by policy. I'm not a policymaker, but I have found it very interesting to come up with this data that could inform better policy, whether that's proactive housing inspections or greater protections for tenants. But yeah, I think that's a great next direction to go, is to talk to policymakers themselves.
Yeah. What do you think, Rachel? Are there new ordinances or laws or regulations that you think could be helpful and could benefit from using this data to design or craft?
I'm not sure about specific policies that might be helpful, but I do think this type of information and data really just continues to highlight the importance of these partnerships between Cincinnati Children's and Legal Aid. We also have a partnership that includes the City Health Department to deal with housing conditions issues when there are kids who have asthma and are hospitalized for asthma. I think this data just continues to reinforce the importance of those types of partnerships in dealing with long-term health outcomes and improving them.
Yeah. Rachel, you were talking earlier about how, or we were talking earlier about how challenging it can be for a under-resourced parent who is stressed to the max with a million things to go through the steps of reporting a health code violation, whether it's mold or something else. Can you give us a sense for what the day-to-day life of some of your clients is without, identifying anybody by name? But I think, you know, I've interviewed a lot of families in the past who are struggling with problems like this, and just the frustration and strain that I've seen on the faces of moms and dads and kids. I'm not sure everybody really understands how big an impact this has on people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think using the example of education actually is a really good place to start. I represent a lot of people in a lot of kids in expulsion hearings, trying to keep them from being removed from school. And part of the reason that work is so important is because if a child is removed from school, that often means that a parent has to stay home. Oftentimes, people who are working in hourly jobs don't have paid leave, don't have a lot of leeway in terms of if they don't show up for work 1 or 2 days, they're probably not going to have a job anymore. So that removal from school has now led to a job loss, which is going to lead to income loss, which could lead to eviction or housing loss. It could lead to trying to get public benefits and struggling because of work requirements that are now required for certain types of public benefits. And so for what I see with a lot of my clients is that one seemingly small issue can really quickly snowball into something much bigger. And I think that goes to the housing conditions also. If you're living with mold or bad pests in your house and it's not sustainable for your family because your child may have asthma and it's causing hospitalization, then maybe you have to move in with a family member, you end up homeless, and that can cause all kinds of other kind of trickle-down issues for the kids and their family.
Yeah. Well, even if your child has chronic asthma and is sick all the time and you don't have paid sick leave, mm-hmm. like that's the snowball effect there too.
Yeah. No, yeah. It can snowball in so many directions, in so many ways. And I just see that so frequently with our clients, and particularly those that get referred by Cincinnati Children's. The referral might say it's for food stamp denial or Social Security is terminated. And when we get to talking to folks, we often learn that the problem is much bigger. And there's sometimes a housing issue and an education issue and maybe a family law issue. And that's very common.
Yeah. Carson, do you think there will be a time when this tool is available to the public if people want to be able to search if they're looking for an apartment to rent or even a home to buy? Is there a point at which they'll be able to search a database and check out this data?
Yeah, I think we're still pretty far from that point, but I think new iterations of the model could adjust it to work at a more individual level. But I think now we're thinking it will only be available to trusted community partners, just because we don't want anyone to use this information in potentially the wrong ways.
Hmm. What are some of the concerns there? Like how people could use it the wrong? I'm not trying to give anybody bad ideas, but what are the concerns?
I don't know much about the housing market, but I think housing prices and the rental market are really tough and are already making things harder for families living in these high-risk areas. So I think that's an area where it could potentially come targeted in a way that's not health-promoting.
I see. I understand. Well, this has been fascinating. I have been talking with Cincinnati Children's MD and PhD candidate in the Division of Biomedical Informatics, Carson Hartledge, and Legal Aid Society of Southwest Ohio team lead attorney, Rachel Barr. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.